Realist Report. And now your host, John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. The website is therealistreport.com, where you can find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other broadcasts I have participated in. You can also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, an about section, and my Twitter feed, which is embedded on the right-hand side of the website. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to The Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage our listeners to subscribe to both publications. Visit AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for more details. And with that said, let me introduce my special guest this evening. I am very honored to have Carolyn Yeager back here on The Realist Report. She was just on the program on March 30th, which you can find in the archives of The Realist Report podcast section of the website. Carolyn, welcome back. How are you this evening?
Oh, hi, John. I'm just fine. Thank you.
Very good. Yeah, we had a great discussion. I guess that's been almost 3 weeks ago. And I wanted to have you back on to talk a little bit more about Trump and talk a lot more about Hitler and National Socialism and revisionism topics that you have spent a lot of time dealing with and researching and talking about. And you have a very good take on all of these subjects. In fact, as I mentioned on the last program, I've learned quite a bit from you, Carolyn. So it's good to have you on here and talk more about these subjects. So, to get started, can you please tell us your thoughts on this Syrian airstrike situation? I wanted to start out and talk about some current events and Trump in particular. So what are your thoughts on Trump's decision to launch an attack on Syria?
Well, I was shocked, like you and others, and I know you had a radio program scheduled, I think, that very night. And you talked about it a lot with Dr. McDonald. And you were both upset about it and shocked by it. And I wasn't sure what to think for a while. I mean, I didn't want to come out and say, make such a fast judgment, because it was kind of surprising and wanted to figure out what was going on. But eventually, after a couple of days, I had to say that I disagreed with it. Now I really disagree with it. But I don't think that it's enough for us to all turn against Trump and decide the whole thing is over and we've been betrayed and we've been this and that and the Trumpism is dead. I don't think we should go that far. Plus, I think we should stick in there. And we still have a lot of positive things going on with President Trump, and we should stick in there and push for our views and our influence and try to get him to do as much as possible on that. He's not moving forward on anything at the speed that we would like and that he promised. Oh, he's not doing anything like he promised. And so I guess I think there is some truth, though, in the fact that when you do become president, it's not as easy, and that's why presidents seldom are known to keep their promises and do what they say they were going to do. Sometimes they don't do it at all, and they go back on them. And this one seemed to go back on the America First, which was very important to me and very appealing to me. And I'd like to add in here that when Trump came up with all these things, it did seem too good to be true, didn't it? it's like right from the start, he said things that were like, wow, that's fantastic, And he never backed down, maybe only just slightly once in a while, and he kept going with all of this. And I'm still trying to figure out how much he believes all this, because I think he must believe it, because he wouldn't have been, nobody would have told him to say those things because everybody thought it was, you know, political death to talk the way he was talking. But he kept getting, over the, you know, the media would attack him, and then his poll numbers would go up, and that just kept happening, you know. So we started to have a lot of more faith in him and believe that, he wouldn't destroy himself by saying these things. But, it may have been too good to be true because he doesn't seem to be able to do it. He does have a lot of, headwinds to go against. In this regard, I think the big bad guy here is the media. The media has doing, has been behaving worse than I've ever seen it. And the Democrat Party too has been behaving in a way that I've never seen them, a party, behave in this country, in this two-party system. Just absolutely, destructive. And the media has been so, organized against Trump. They come out with a certain kind of a attack on him. And all the ones who are following along in that line are doing the same things. And when I noticed, like, The Hill, that's a website that was always about, Congress, you know, and what's happening in Congress and all politics, U.S. politics. And they've kind of, they've revamped their site. I knew they existed, but I never followed them. And I just started, getting something out of what all of their, because they had a story on everything, you know, they'd comment on everything. So you could find out everything that was going on there. I was started reading it some. Now that I like it less, I still look at it every day because I can't find a place with good news available. You know, a good news site where I can. The best that I know is Fox News for getting the daily news in a form that I can tolerate, you know, without getting sick to my stomach by the way they portray it. But this Hill is, not like CNN, but it's just as anti-Trump as CNN, and it's just as correlated with CNN and the kind of issues that it brings up. It's really terrible. It's terrible what they're doing. We've always known the media was bad, but now it's just so clearly biased. I've just never seen anything like it. And, yeah. Trump is right. Go ahead, John.
Oh no, I was going to say, I follow The Hill pretty closely because I think they do some pretty decent reporting actually. I think they do. They cover Washington. They cover Congress. I mean, at least if you want to get, an idea.
Yeah, but it's also biased now. Well, really, the headline writing is the worst. You read the headlines and they're just, maybe they think that's what gets people to read them.
Right.
But they're so slanted. And go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say one article that I just read this weekend from The Hill, it's called The Memo, and it says, has Trump gone Washington? And it's about how, you know, people on the right, you know, people like Ann Coulter, for example, and certainly the alt-right and the people, you know, in our camp, the white nationalist community that supported Trump, are becoming very skeptical of him and kind of jaded with what he's doing. And, you know, most people have been very critical of his decision to attack Syria. So this article was interesting, and it kind of reflects what we're seeing across the board, really, is how the media hasn't – they've basically – I don't want to say like they're supporting Trump now, but now that he's sort of backtracking on some of these issues and he's, you know, showing his neocon, foreign policy when it comes to Syria, for example. And now he's saying we got to go after North Korea. I mean, this guy just seems to be a total warmonger now. Everybody's like kind of warming up to Trump now. At least that's kind of like the official consensus opinion that you see reflected in publications like The Hill. And I think the Washington Post just published an article I read the other day kind of saying the same thing. So it's interesting what's going on and how the media has been treating him. They've definitely been very, you know, outright slanderous toward him and just attacking him left and right. But now that he's kind of backtracking on some of these things, they seem to be kind of almost supporting him to a certain extent. Have you noticed that at all?
Well, because they'd like to support that stuff. I think what the media intends, I think their greatest intention, apart from, you know, keeping their organization going and making money and getting readers and so on, which does play a role there, is the same thing that the Democrat Party is doing, that is to separate Trump from his supporters. That's what they want to do, and that's why I distrust a whole lot of these stories that say, oh, Trump is, you know, he's going against his base and he's becoming this and that and all. I don't know how much, you know, to really measure that. Like when you talk about Syria and Korea and so on, remember that all throughout the campaign, he said he was going to take on ISIS. He was going to get rid of that kind of a thing, and he would do it fast. He was going to do it in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah. He's always kind of had that warmongering
to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't necessarily and when it comes to Korea. Korea is outrageous in the things it says, you know, and it is testing these nuclear delivery systems for their nuclear warheads. And it is saying I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And they are outlaws in world, you know, in world governments or whatever. So I think Trump is doing his deal making thing. You hope he won't get trapped in some way in it, because he's making deals with people like Communist China, you know, and that leader. And he wanted to work with Putin, which everybody seemed on our side, you know, seemed to like. But did they make that impossible? Did they go after that? That's where I say, the Democrat Party and the media went after any kind of relationship between Trump and Putin. And I think a whole lot of that stuff is concocted. And, you know, you used to talk a lot about fake news. Some of these news stories you just mentioned, I think they're partly largely fake. I think a lot of this stuff is part of what's being dreamed up. They're not actually covering what they think is happening. They're pushing this agenda to destroy Trump and what he's wanted to do, and separate him from his support. And that's why, I'm just hearing myself coming back to me. That's why from you, John.
you sound fine to me.
Oh, okay. So that's why I'm quite hesitant now to jump on that bandwagon. And to tear down Trump and say,
sure,
letting us down, because that's exactly what they're trying to accomplish.
Gotcha. No, I understand that. That's a totally valid point to make, and I hear you. I guess, I should say, when I interviewed Dr. McDonald, we did not plan on talking about obviously the Syria strike happened literally.
I'm sure you didn't.
No, I mean, it literally happened like 20 minutes before we started the podcast. So it had just happened.
Right.
So, you know, I was really kind of trying to familiarize myself with the situation as we were doing the podcast. And one thing that struck me, I mean, right off the bat was, you know, Trump's decision to attack Syria was totally contrary to all of the criticisms he had made about our disastrous foreign policy in the Middle East, these endless wars in Iraq and even Syria. And there's, you know, literally, you know, probably 10 different tweets that you can go and find on, you know, Trump's Twitter profile where he's criticizing Obama, saying, don't go into Syria. It's going to be a disaster, as of course it has been. So that was really just disappointing, you know, how he would totally just backtrack on all of that and totally contradict himself. But even more than that was that this alleged chemical attack, I mean, did it even take place? We talk about fake news. This is like the epitome of fake news. How do we know this even happened? How do we know that these videos that Trump was talking about, that his daughter was crying about, how do we know that these are legitimate, you know, genuine depictions of what actually happened? I don't think that they are, frankly. But, you know, I mean, how do we know?
I doubt
it's fake news.
Myself, and I'm not at all That's the worst thing. And it gets worse as time goes on, you know, because he doesn't say anything. He hasn't explained it himself. He hasn't said, well, this or that. He hasn't said anything about it. Except what he did say made it worse. I thought it was awful when he started calling Assad names based on, you know, his intelligence that he used to question, as to that it was absolutely certain that Assad was behind this. And this is so shades of Iraq back when with Bush and Colin Powell and that, you know, it's
oh,
so
absolutely, absolutely.
To
it's
that.
The same
it's like,
thing.
Wow, what are we going through this again? And this is one thing I don't, this is the only thing I'm really holding against him, but I'm not going to let that make me say, oh, well, he's the enemy. I just don't understand. I don't agree with it. I think it was a big mistake, and it seems, and you don't even know if he did it because his intelligence people were telling him he had to do it or something, because he seems to have jumped on it, and then he started calling Assad a butcher and an animal. I thought that was terrible to call a head of a state an animal. And he's saying, going at killing babies like that. And what about all those babies, the incubator babies, all these stories? And he's familiar with those things. He's brought up a number of that stuff during his campaign, showing that he is familiar with all this lying. And he was against the Bush program, you know, and the Bush policies. And then, this is truly inexplicable.
Right. And well, and then here he is. Answer. Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre. And then here he is swallowing and accepting all of these ridiculous lies, all of this ridiculous fake news. And what was interesting was how shortly after this happened, they actually interviewed Assad. And Assad literally said that the entire event was phony, that the videos were fake, and that the attack didn't even happen. It certainly wasn't carried out by his forces. Putin was also essentially saying the same thing. Putin was out there saying that, you know, this chemical attack is as fake as the WMD claims in Iraq. So Putin and Assad are actually telling the truth. And I thought that Trump would be, you know, sort of a leader like these guys, and he clearly failed in this regard, which was so disappointing. And another thing I want to point out, and I talked about this with Dr. McDonald, all of this quote-unquote intelligence, you know, saying that Assad was behind this, I guarantee you it comes directly from the Israelis. There's all these articles in Haaretz, in the Times of Israel, in the Jewish Daily Forward, saying that Israel was 100% certain that Assad did this, and they were in contact with us, and you know, we were warning the Israelis that
they always do that.
They always do that.
Israel media, especially the Israeli, but also just the Jewish, those Jewish papers and so on, they always push their agenda. And they make out that this is the agenda that Washington agrees with. This is what Trump agrees with. They always make out that what they think is what the politicians are supporting and so on. When it isn't even true necessarily.
Right. Yeah. So, they just kind of assert it and then expect everyone to just accept it. And sadly, a lot of times we do.
The Jews too, they talk about.
Right. Well, I mean,
like this story with Schneiderman, like, oh, he's so close to Trump and he's telling Trump to do this and that. And, Trump is listening to him. Well, who knows whether Trump is listening to him? See, they're saying that kind of thing.
Who's Schneiderman? Who's this?
That story you sent me, was that his name? What was his name? I lost the story now, but no, I should be here.
Steven Schwartzman. Is that what you're talking about?
Schwartzman, sorry.
Yeah. Well, and see, that was kind of the next topic I wanted to talk about is, you know, one thing, let me just say real quick. I've always been supportive of Trump, you know, when he was running as a candidate and when he, you know, got into office. Because he deserved our support. I mean, he was saying all the right things. He was acting in the right way. He was acting, you know, totally different than any other candidate I've ever seen. I mean, he was talking about immigration. He was talking about, you know, putting America first, getting our jobs back, ending these disastrous wars in the Middle East. You know, we could go on and on. He was saying a lot of very good things, and I think he deserved our support and our praise. He was a very inspirational type guy. He has a lot of potential, I think. And now, you know, with this attack in Syria based on fake news, now he deserves to be criticized, so I'm going to criticize him, and that's what I've always said. When he deserves to be praised, we should be praising him. When he deserves to be criticized, we should be criticizing him. And I think that's pretty much true across the board in the alt-right and in, you know, just the white nationalist movement in general. You know, people are outraged at this. People are, you know, see this as clearly a betrayal of his America First foreign policy, of all the other things he said, all the criticisms he leveled against Obama and, you know, wanting to go into Syria in the past and whatnot. So, I mean, I don't
look at, let me say this, if he's, if I don't see, I couldn't go so far as to say that, that he was a puppet all along, that he ran and said all these things because he thought it would get him elected. Because I wouldn't think that anybody thought nobody thought it would get him elected. They thought he was killing himself, you know, by saying all these things. But it woke, you know, got people charged up, and the right people, enough people. And then Hillary Clinton actually turned out to be such a bad candidate. So, in any case, and that after, drawing us all in, we're not even his base, John. His base is the white, working class, non-college population. That's not us, you know. We're basically more intellectuals in the alt-right. So we're not the ones he's counting on. But if he wouldn't try to pull these people in and then just to, throw them to the dogs, you know, and, upset them. So I just can't figure out the reason for doing this. And it's just now occurring to me, if you say, that, this never actually happened, that gas attack, or it wasn't, certainly wasn't by the government, that our government decided to, with his approval, decided to use it that way. Because they said right away, Trump said, we're not going into Syria. And I was very happy to hear that, because that's what worried me. And then, Tillerson said, we're not going into Syria. And Mattis said, and he had no plans at all to go after Assad or anything like that. This was just a one-time thing. Well, I don't know. Did they think that this one-time thing was going to be helpful in some way? Or did Trump think it was going to be helpful to him to go all out and make these extra comments about how bad Assad was and we couldn't live with him and so on, but we weren't going to do anything about it right now. It's all so stupid.
It really is. Well, yeah. It's just disappointing because, I mean, here's Trump talking about fake news all the time, and then he just accepts this obvious fake news story, in my opinion. By the way, let me mention, I was checking my email before we started here. Hadding Scott has a good article over on his blog, which is national-socialist-worldview.blogspot.com. This is from April 14th, entitled Fake Intelligence Supports Zionist Warmongering.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good article. Check it out, guys. I tweeted it.
Other people have been carrying that, you know, that I got that email from that postal fellow myself. It was quite complex, but I didn't read it all. I didn't go into it all. But it seems I asked Hadding if he felt convinced that this postal knew what he's talking about, and Hadding said, yeah, he did. He thinks it's all fake too. You just can't figure out, why things have turned out this way. What's the point? But I think that the last thing I want to say here is that Trump did make the point that he was going to take charge and we were going to defeat ISIS and so on and so forth, and maybe this has some part in it. I don't know, because it's just too darn bizarre and stupid. But our government has done this, like we were talking about with under Bush. So, and got into that war in Iraq. But see, he knows that. Trump knows better than to do that. That's why he probably says we're not going into Syria. I don't know. And then, you know, I have to admit that the other things I say, well, immigration is still going, but it's not going like it should. It's not growing as strong as it should.
Yeah.
So that's more disappointment.
Yeah. He's been totally stalled on, you know, implementing any sort of immigration reform, at least from what I can tell. I mean, with all these activist judges saying that what he's doing is unconstitutional and illegal. I mean, you know, that's kind of taken a back burner to this situation with Syria and Russia and now North Korea. So, yeah, I mean,
I think he's obviously decided that his rapprochement with Russia is out of the question now, and he's given up on that. So he's taking another tack by getting together with China, the Chinese leader.
Right.
I don't know, but I think that we should keep, we should not abandon him because that's what they want. That's what the enemy wants. And
yeah.
That's not going to do any good.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I was kind of a little bit emotional when he was it, cause I'm just so against these stupid freaking wars. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, I am. They're so ridiculous. And what's really sad is just like average normal people, like a friend of mine that I know, this guy, he was in the military for a while and served in Iraq, and he's like all gung-ho about this Syria strike. I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, why are we bombing these poor people thousands of miles from us that pose no threat to us? I mean, unless we let them come over to our countries, then they pose a threat to us.
Well, we really didn't bomb those people. Supposedly we did a strategic strike on this air base.
Well, I understand.
Killed, but,
yeah, and I mean, I understand your point, but still, like, we don't need to be over there in the Middle East. And people want to see more war over there as if, like, it's this phony American patriotism that is promoted by organizations like Fox News, frankly. And, you know, they just see, oh, we're America. We can go bomb whoever we want and we're going to attack. It's so bad. It's so bad. It's so phony.
Yeah.
And it's so superficial and just war, like warmongering to the nth degree. It's so counterproductive and just so against our interests.
What struck me a couple of days after that Syria attack that I was trying to, you know, make sense of things or come up with some excuses or something. And I recall that, the president is now the commander in chief, but also leader of the free world. You know, it came to my mind that every American president since, Truman, as soon as he becomes president, he automatically assumes the mantle of leader of the free world. And Trump was actually saying, I'm not going to be leader of the free world. I'm not going to be leader of the world. I don't want to be leader of the world. I'm going to be leader of the United States. And in this, and the European so-called allies were going crazy, you know, stand up for NATO. You got to protect us all. But he was saying you have to pay more. He's saying, well, do it if you pay more. So, he's got all these little things going, but, you can hardly avoid that. How can the American president say, no, I'm going to ignore the world and I'm just going to take care of America? That sounded good. It still sounds good, but I don't know, what kind of pressures he's got on him or what kind of feelings come over him when he puts himself in line of all these, you know, American leaders and so on, that he has to live up to certain things. I don't know what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe they start talking to him. You know, you can't ignore this, Mr. President. We've got responsibilities here that have been in all these treaties and all this time and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to move on here in just a minute because I don't want to focus too much on Trump. I mean, I think we both agree this airstrike in Syria was pretty counterproductive and just totally unnecessary. You know, one thing I do want to say is I do still think that he was genuine in what he was saying in, you know, during the election, you know, before he actually became president. He did strike me as very genuine. He still does to a certain extent. I do tend to think that he is being more and more influenced by the people we don't want him influenced by, people like Kushner, for example. And there's been a lot of articles and a lot of speculation about this. Who really knows? I mean, I'm not in Trump's inner circle. I don't know who's in it whispering in his ear all day long. But it does seem like Kushner is playing a bigger and bigger role. This guy Gary Cohn, who's a Jew, another Jew, is playing a bigger role. And I mean, there's other articles that I posted on Twitter, and I sent you a couple links to them. But it does seem like this Jewish faction is really kind of consolidating power and really playing a bigger role in the Trump administration. And this guy Steve Bannon seems to be kind of, I don't know if he's necessarily on the outs, but he's not as important of a figure as it seemed like he was in the beginning. So that is concerning, and I guess really it's kind of another one of those things we just have to wait and see. I think we should continue to criticize him when he's wrong, or when he does something that's against our interests, or when he does something or says something that's against or contradictory to what he was campaigning on and to what his agenda is all about. But I think you're right that we shouldn't just, you know, throw him out, you know, and say, oh, Trump is he's a Jewish puppet.
Because really there's... We have no power. We have no candidates. We have nobody else. And all these white nationalist critics, they're not going to do anything. They have no influence or power. They're just talking, trying to get a few camp, you know, donations or something. I mean, what are they? What is anybody going to do? It kind of gets me, you know, we're just lucky Trump came along. We didn't even bring him up, you know, we didn't even get him. He just showed up out of the blue and, kind of a strange person to be carrying this message, but he has been carrying it. Now, what's going on now? I think we should maybe try to figure it out, or at least, you know, wait and watch and everything, but we should be, standing up and pushing in whatever way we can. That agenda, not necessarily attacking Trump for it or criticizing Trump for it even, but just talking about what needs to be done and encouraging Jeff Sessions. He's the best thing we got going right now. More of this kind of thing. I mean, that's the best thing we can do. And it has to be his real base, those white voters who have to make noise, and a lot of them are all for these military actions.
Right, exactly. That's what I was getting at. Yeah, these are the people that want to see us fight more stupid wars because they watch Fox News and they buy all this bullshit about Assad being a butcher and North Korea being this huge menace and all this other nonsense.
Yeah, they're the exceptional state. So it may be we're not going to get Trump away from that. That America is exceptional and all of that sort of thing. We can't expect miracles. He's not a white nationalist. We're going to talk about National Socialism, and that's just, it's just totally out of sight, you know?
Yes. You know, and I do want to move on and talk about Hitler and National Socialism in World War II. And one point I'd like to make is this paradigm that, you know, America's the leader of the free world and, you know, we have to stand up and fight for freedom all across the globe. This paradigm really is a result of World War II, of the official Jewish narrative of World War II. And I mean, in my opinion, that's why it's so important to openly deal with these topics and to try to get as most accurate interpretation of what actually happened in World War II and what it was all about as possible. And I mean, you know, these issues can't be avoided. If we ever want to solve these problems and put our nation and our race back on a right course, we have to get this right. We have to get history right. And the official narrative of World War II is very tough.
You know,
It's the most difficult subject.
That struck me. You know this guy, Gorka, who was the Hungarian, ex-Hungarian, who is in Trump's administration, who was, you know, in his campaign. You know who I'm talking about?
I do, yeah.
And he's in the national security aspect of it now. He's a national security advisor of some sort. And, he's a advisor to the president, I think. And I saw something that he had said, a week or so ago. I had it under his picture. He said, Trump is going to fight evil in the world or throughout the world. Trump is going to fight evil in the world. I thought, what the heck? Talk about anything that's more globalist and more, Bush sounding, going back to Bush again. That's exactly what he wasn't going to do. Now this guy who's close in there, you know, he's got a high position and he's on the news all the time, says that Trump is going to fight evil in the world. It's just like, Orwellian to see things like that.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it all revolves around the official narrative of World War II. Well, in the last show, we kind of talked about how you got into Hitler and studying National Socialism in World War II. And one question I had for you that I think I kind of tripped you up on, because I don't think you had really thought too much about it or you didn't expect me to ask it, was, you know, if you could explain, or what's the most important points you would make about Hitler to somebody who is sort of new to this information? Do you want to address this question first?
Yes, I do want to, because I didn't like it that I didn't have a very good response, a very quick response to that. But you're right, I have to kind of think about things and bring things back to mind and so on. I think now that the best thing would be to say, consider the source of those who were and are out to destroy Hitler. Just like I've been talking about, they want those who wanted to destroy Trump. They want to destroy him, and they did want to. And so everything that was done and put out by that same damn media, I guess we call it the Jewish media, but even if it isn't Jewish, it's the same horrible media, liberal communist type media. That is putting out all the information about people, you know, and trying to destroy the reputation of those who are not on their team. So the current world order, which is the Jewish world order, we tend to call it. It's not totally Jewish, but the world order of today is the same world order that defeated Hitler, because they came into power then and took over everywhere. They were against his nationalist, non-internationalist views and policies. What was Hitler? What did Hitler stand for? He was against the gold system and international banking systems. He was against world organizations like the League of Nations. Of course, mainly because they were not being fair, because of they were backing the Versailles Treaty and the agreements of World War One. But he wanted autarky in Germany. The Germans were highly productive people. They were very resourceful and frugal, so they could do well with this kind of system of autarky, which is self-sufficiency. And this is what Hitler was promoting, to keep Germany free from debt. You know, the world powers and the Jews had absolutely destroyed Germany after World War One with debt. And they were, the inflation, you know, was that crazy stuff where the money was inflating faster than they could spend it and use it. And it was ridiculous. I mean, it was insane what was going on there. Germany was being killed, and Hitler was very sensitive to this, and he loved Germany. He was a true patriot and a fighter. And so he came up with the new system. He got himself elected. Through campaigning and so on, and the way you're supposed to, and he promoted keeping Germany free from debt to international bankers, and that is the crime, the bottom line sin that he committed, and why they're decided they had to destroy him. And gosh, maybe Trump is aware that this attempt to destroy him and his presidency became so bad so fast that he decided he needed to do a few things differently in order to preserve his administration. Now, just going back to that for a second, Hitler didn't do that, and I don't know, he didn't do that. He didn't betray any of his principles. But Trump may be doing it because he's a different kind of thinker, and he may realize that he needs to go along a little bit, at least appear to, if he wants to get anything done and stay in power. Because I didn't mention, but I did want to, that when this combination Democrat Party and media assault on him includes impeaching him. And they're trying to find everything, and they still are. And they could do it, you know. They could succeed in doing it. So that may be part of his thinking. I don't know. It's a possibility.
It certainly is.
Back to Hitler, I'd say that the most important – there's so many things. I mean, there's so much to say about Hitler. But the most important thing is that I think that money angle that he he wanted to get out from having to deal with international bankers, because they're the ones who were destroying Germany before, and they have the power to do that. And that money power that they have, we tend to forget it, you know, but it still exists. It's so great. It's there's so many issues that come up. What I say is that they come up in order to distract us away from talking about these bottom line issues, you know, like the money power, and which belongs to the Jews, and how they use it, and how they've destroyed people who go up against it. So they start all this stuff, you know. I say, you know, the Holocaust, John, has got so many angles and pieces and parts to it that if you start solving one part or show that it's false, they'll just come up with another aspect of it and say, well, what about this here over here? And they did the same with 9/11. Everything you talked about with 9/11, they'd come up with some other aspect, because there was all kinds of tentacles of 9/11, of, you know, the various events that took place under that heading. And a lot of people weren't that conversant with all of them.
That's very, very true. Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of time to get to the bottom of all of these topics. I mean, 9/11 or World War II. And see, this is what I wanted to bring up with Hitler, is when I was getting into, you know, I had mentioned in the first show, and people who've been following my, you know, my website and my podcast know this very well. I was really focused on 9/11 at the very beginning when I first got into all of this. And then I started, you know, getting on the internet and hearing about other ideas about, you know, maybe the Holocaust isn't true. You know, different interpretations or perspectives of World War II and Hitler even. And I was just open-minded, and I wanted to figure it all out. And I came across this idea that Hitler was like a Zionist agent. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, maybe he was Jewish himself, and, you know, he was working for the bankers. And I got really wrapped up in this for a couple weeks. And I remember watching Jim Condit Jr.'s video presentation, where he sits and he speaks and he makes this big long presentation. And, you know, if you're new to this information, it's very interesting, very fascinating. I mean, it's not, you know, he's citing all these books and bringing up all these sources and whatnot. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. Maybe Hitler was like this Zionist agent, or he was a Rothschild puppet or something. And, you know, I started researching it. I came across your work. I came across Bill Fink's work. And it was when I actually read Mein Kampf, I quickly realized that there is absolutely no way that Adolf Hitler could have been a Jew or a Rothschild puppet or anything like that. I mean, this man was speaking the absolute truth. And I think that's a big reason why he's so demonized, and they've turned him into this monster, is not only the fake Holocaust story, but, I mean, that's one way that they've demonized him and totally discredited him. But they don't want anyone to actually hear what he had to say. Because if you do, it's like, holy shit, this guy's, I mean, man, he's right about all this stuff. You know, he makes a lot of sense. He's offering solutions. He's expertly analyzing all of these complex cultural and political and racial issues and explaining them in very straightforward terms, providing solutions again. And it was just amazing, you know, researching all this stuff. And this was another topic I wanted to bring up. You know,
you mentioned that ridiculous Jim Condit, and I agree that if you don't know anything and you watch that video of his, you think, wow, he's got it all down there and all these sources. They're all phony. They're all fake. They're not good sources. For the most part, almost all of them, a lot of them are just plain old fake. But he's just one representative. Why is Jim Condit against Adolf Hitler? A white Catholic who says he's a friend of American Free Press and all these people, you know, friend of Mike Piper and so on. Why is he? Because he's a Catholic who's got tied in with Poland, and they hate Hitler, and so he's joined in that cause with them to not give Hitler his due, because he was what he did, you know, he's a bad guy, for Poles think so. And there's all kinds of people like that. In fact, speaking about the white destroying the white race or the survival of the white race, it wouldn't be difficult to stop it if white people wanted to stop it, but the majority of white people go along with it, with the things that are actually causing it. And that's our problem. Our problem really is not so much the Jews, because if white people wanted to see what was really going on and save themselves and not fall for all these various side issues, the Jews wouldn't be able to do anything.
I understand your point, but I think because the Jews basically control the narrative, they control information.
Why do they control the narrative? We let them.
Them do it. Well, but think about it. I mean,
handed it over to them. People are caught up in guilt and thinking they have to be tolerant and bring other people into their communities. They fall. Even back then, they weren't quite so soppy about it, but, even back then, they fall for that idea that, well, you're not treating us as human beings. We're equal human beings, and you're not giving us all the rights, and we want to have rights here. And then they act like they're going to do such good things with it. And, then they start working against you. They start working against the nation of people that allowed them to have rights in their nation.
They do it every time. And Hitler had this figured out, and he articulated it very, very well. And I'd like to say, I think it's pretty accurate to say that the vast majority of the German people who lived under National Socialism knew this very well. They knew the Jews were a threat. They knew how subversive they were and how alien they were. And they knew that
they didn't always know it, John, but Hitler's party all through the 20s was doing a big training job, you know, and they had to convince the German people. And they were successful at doing it because Hitler started making Germany such a better place. Now, but Hitler wasn't elected until 1933, so all he could do was campaign and talk and so on. But it was after he got into power, and he started improving Germany. Germany's fortunes got better. That's what convinced people. I mean, a lot of the people who were still not convinced, his party didn't have a majority membership, but it had enough to win in the parliament. at one point. So that's his success at making life better. Then they started believing him and loving him. And that's what Trump is trying to do. And bringing that, you know, I personally think there's an awful lot of, now I'm a little concerned because of Syria, but I always thought there was a lot of similarity between Trump and Hitler. Not that Trump is anywhere close to the man Hitler was, but still there's a lot of similarities that you can point to. But I never wanted to talk about him because I thought that would be very bad for him because they were trying to say he was like Hitler. You know, I know the whole thing is so damn screwy. But whatever it was I was saying, making whatever point I was making there.
Well, I mean, you were talking about how you saw a lot of similarities between Trump and Hitler, but you didn't want to really mention
that. Well, yeah, but before that, I was saying that Trump did something. Oh, yeah, Trump thinks like that if he gets into office and he starts doing all these great things, that he'll win people over. That's what he was sure of, you know. And he started doing great things, but the effort by the Democrats and the media combined, I go back to that again, like a big cabal, and the Jews, put the Jews in there with them, doesn't care about what good things are done for the country. They want to get rid of somebody like Trump because he speaks a nationalist language. He's been speaking a nationalist language. You know, I really do wonder now if he's cutting back on that in order to keep from getting impeached. I'm thinking that's a consideration. Because it makes more sense to me than anything else I've come up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's definitely a possibility, no doubt. You know, I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of...
You know, I view that Adolf Hitler seems to be the greatest white man, Western leader that this world has ever seen. Really, there's nobody compares to all that he's done and all that he did and, how great his verbiage was, you know, the great things he said and wrote and did. But nobody's been more demonized. So, it's a terrible shame.
Yeah. And, you know, that's actually what I usually say to people is, you know, one of the main points I want to get across about Hitler is that he has been absolutely lied about. And that in reality, he really was like the greatest Western leader in modern history, certainly. And there's plenty of ways to prove that and to demonstrate that. And then I also get into what they were really trying to do about the Jewish problem. You know, it wasn't as if they just irrationally hated these people. It was far from that. They were very intellectual about this and very, you know, pragmatic. Like they recognized just how alien they were and how subversive they were, and they said, look, you guys are not welcome in our country anymore. And it's a totally rational, legitimate perspective to hold if you're being objective about the Jewish problem. So two questions I want you to address. I'd like for you to define and kind of explain what National Socialism is. You know, you've studied it pretty extensively, so how would you, you know, sort of explain it to someone? And then after that, I'd like for you to explain the Jewish problem from your perspective. You know, how would you explain the Jewish problem to somebody? So let's start with National Socialism. What is National Socialism? How would you explain it to somebody?
Well, it's easy to explain. It's based on the idea of a nation, nationalism, a national people, which in German terminology, National Socialist terminology, is the Volk. And the Volk is a people who have a common ancestry, and they inhabit a land that their ancestors inhabited for many generations before, and so they are tied to this land, and they share. They're like all this folk is like all related in a sense because they come from, you know, common ancestors, and they continue to marry and reproduce among their own people. So, you know, for the most part. So that brings up the racial element doesn't it, John? You can't get away from the racial element because, and that's the problem that then, you know, it's that people have with it. The Jews had that problem with it, and they transferred that to all the rest of the European people because they had so much, they got so much influence. They're able to influence all these other European countries and say, oh, the Germans had your, you know, were attacking you and hurting you, but they were mostly, you know, hurting us Jews, but, and making out that everybody had to be against them because of that. So the racial idea got turned into something evil and bad. But you can't have National Socialism in the German version. You know, I want to say this about it too, that there's, some people think and have tried to do, they try to come up with a non-German National Socialism. They say National Socialism is good for, you know, all white people. We can have all kinds of National Socialism is a spiritual idea, some of them like to say. You know, no, I disagree with that because the whole basis of it was the folk and the land. So it's not a spiritual idea. It's about a people. It's about people and people who are racial kin to one another. It's very, very racially based. So, when I talk about National Socialism, I stick with what took place in Germany. Those years, you know, from during the 1920s and 30s and till 1945. And, what people tried to carry on, those who tried to carry on from that. But, I don't think there's a free flow. There is, you can call it that, but it's not the same and it's not what I consider to be National Socialism. Not that other people can't do it. You don't have to be German, but you can do it in your own country, but it has to be based on the folk and the land and those kind of principles. And another very important principle that National Socialists had was the leadership principle. They had a leader. They didn't have either a monarch or an elected president or something, you know. So, they didn't go, didn't like the democratic parliamentary principle to it. Hitler always made fun of parliament, you know, and the way parliaments worked and didn't think they were very effective at all. And we know our democracies are not. We know, look at here in the United States now with Trump. He can't get his stuff done because it has to go through all this other, you know, the checks and balances, which are supposed to be good. I guess they are in a way, but in another way they're not, because if you get someone who really represents the people and is good, well, then the other half doesn't like him and they stop everything. So, you don't get much done. And he's not
right
getting much done. But the leadership principle is that, the people have a leader and that leader or Führer in German is responsible to each and every citizen. And, each and every citizen looks to him and he's responsible for everything that happens. And the party, there's a party, you know, the party is a vehicle of getting things done. And so the leader, through the party and through all the people that, he are assigned to different jobs and so on, like the Gauss and so on that they had there, that's how you get things done. And there was a parliament, but it was just kind of a, you know, what do you call that, slap. They just sort of went along with things.
Just rubber stamp things.
Rubber stamp, yeah, supported. Yeah.
Well, if you read some of his critiques of democracy, and you know, he articulates some of them in Mein Kampf and some of the speeches that he gave, he was always really critical of it, because we just lack accountability. No one's ever held to account, right?
Right.
I mean, it's always someone else is blaming someone else for this and that, why things don't get done. And also, another big criticism he leveled against democracy is how minorities organize to advance their own interests at the expense of the nation. And we certainly see this right. in America. I mean, my God. Well, and it's so bad in America now that the real people who make up the American nation, white Christian people from Europe, essentially, we're not even allowed to organize politically. I mean, everyone else is out here forming their lobbying groups.
And saying that is that it's based on, this is my last point, it's based on the collective good rather than on preserving individual rights. And a lot of people have a big problem with that today because individual rights are what, you know, oh, you gotta have that, you know, that's been, these things have been made so so vitally necessary without our ever having to have any critical judgment of them because it's like there's no other way. Of course, I grew up in grade school back in the 50s, John, and I remember when I think about that, what I learned was that the only good, you know, the best form of government was democracy, and there was nobody even close. There was nothing else, you know, that was good, and we were the biggest democracy in the world or whatever, and so that, you know, I was grateful for that. Isn't that good, you know?
Yeah, yeah, you're not allowed, not allowed to entertain any other ideas.
This idea is so foreign to us because it makes us think of Stalin or, you know, communism, but it's not the same. It's based on the folk, you know, again, and the common ancestry and the continuing on into the future in that way, and so that's the collective good rather than individual rights are there, but they're not given precedence over the collective good. So if somebody is a criminal, then they're harming the collective good and they have to be punished. And they did have they did have programs of rehabilitation in the prison camps and prisons and so on. And they didn't try to rehabilitate everybody, you know. These things happened to this poor guy and it wasn't really his fault. And he should have some extra, you know, should be given, you know, some consideration for what he's gone through, whatever. That wasn't done because if it was bad for the good of the people, that, you know, for the collective, that was, and that's what, Jeff Sessions is talking about now with his ban, with his immigration, you know, holes on immigration and so on, illegal immigration. These people aren't good for our society. They're not doing any good. So what do we care about their individual rights? They don't have any, but even these people are given individual rights in our society, in America.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you read National Socialist literature, in one book that comes to mind is Hitler's Revolution by Richard Tedor. He cites a lot of these publications and journals and whatnot that were published by the NSDAP or by people associated with it and their critiques of liberalism and how it was just excessive individualism at the expense of the broader nation. And we see that certainly in America. It's so amazing how profound of thinkers the National Socialists really were. And it's no wonder why we're not allowed to read these things and to objectively entertain these ideas, because they certainly make a hell of a lot more sense than what we get in our schools. That's what's so amazing about National Socialism. It's the most sound political, cultural, racial, and economic philosophy I've ever encountered. I mean, it really does answer all the big questions and, you know, political organization. And I mean, you go on and on and on. It has all the answers. And it's just sad to me that we're not even allowed to really think about these things.
Well, I agree. And I think what I've been thinking about lately is that there doesn't seem to be a place where all the National Socialist policy and writings and so on are gathered where people can go and study it. Doesn't seem to be. There's some good sites that have some good things, you know, but it's not comprehensive. And I was thinking about how to, of course, I'm always thinking about what's translating, but where would be all of it, everything you could find, trying to find what is available on the web, more than, you know, maybe some things I am not familiar with or haven't seen yet, and collecting all of this and actually having not just an internet archive, but a real, physical archive of National Socialist material that would be somebody, I would contribute to this, that somebody would, keep together, so it wouldn't be lost.
Because, well, I'll tell you.
It's getting hard to find. And for this, I would want to have just the real stuff from the German National Socialist, party from, that they put out and the government put out between, 1920 and 1945. And I wouldn't want to include, even though there's a lot of good writing about it by other people, I wouldn't include that in it. So it wouldn't get confused. It'd be just, you know, what was actually, produced at this time.
So you're talking strictly like original primary source material.
Right.
Right. Yeah. 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 It probably should be done at some point. I do know this. Richard Tedor's book is great. I mean, he cites all of these original sources and, you know, it's a very well documented book. Bill Fink's site, the Mein Kampf Project, has a lot of really good original source material. That, you know, he's done a lot of podcasts discussing it, reading speeches, discussing different pamphlets and whatnot. There's also that other website, what is it? The guy translated a bunch of National Socialist material and makes it available online, although I don't think he's really sympathetic. He's just, you know, sort of just objectively putting it out there.
Oh, the Calvin EDU.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good one. But it's a mixture. It isn't everything that I would want to have there because there's a lot of extraneous stuff there. And not every speech or every thing that Goebbels said or, you know, but just the part that really shows what National Socialism was and what their programs were and how they were carried out and so on. I think that's what we're in danger of losing. I don't know what all there might be that, I've already started a search. I've got a list of things, because I decided I'm going to make this a project. I can't think of anything better than that to do.
Carolyn, you got to do it. Someone's got to, and you're the person to do it.
Well, I don't know. Somebody, would need help. I'm not the person to keep it all, that's for sure. Somebody has to. But anyway, that I think is good. And so, continuing on here, if we want to talk about the Jewish problem.
You know what? Let me just mention one final thing about National mm-hmm. Socialism. One thing that has always stood out to me ever since I really started, you know, getting into the subject. And I agree with pretty much everything you said about National Socialism, how you would define it. But one thing that kind of struck me was how they really seem to recognize and value every single worker in society, whether they were, you know, like a manual laborer, you know, building a sidewalk, for example, or an intellectual. Like everyone was valued, everyone's importance was recognized and celebrated. And I think that's very unique because, you know, in America, there's still a sort of like, I don't think it's the same as it was in Europe, you know, this classism. But you still see that in America to a certain extent, and you know, manual laborers are kind of looked down upon and you know, degraded to a certain extent.
Well, it was certainly like that in Europe. John, that comes from the folk idea. If the nation is a community of the folk, then every member is a folk. You know, one of the folk. And so
right. Everyone's equally important. Yeah.
That's the difference between that and the other, which turns into classes, right? In the rich poor thing and male, female, even the women, were always so highly valued. The children were so highly valued and, everything good comes from that. And then people make that out to be evil because it includes the racial element. You know, you can't be different. You can't mix people together and have a full community.
Right. Yeah. And I mean that principle to me is like genuine socialism, right? Like where everyone is valued. Everyone is recognized as being a valuable, critical contributor to society. Everyone's important, and we all have a role to play.
During all his political campaigning and so on, the National Socialists had the problem of the communists, and just like today, we're having now more and more like that with these vicious leftists, you know, and they had these vicious communists attacking them, not wanting them to speak, not wanting them to have any rallies, you know, trying to shut everything down and stop them and so on. Yet Hitler wanted to convert every one of these German communists because they were Germans. And, you know, and the same thing with the prisoners, which I was talking about the criminals. They're Germans too. So they want to do their best to rehabilitate them, you know, and bring them into the fold of being good, working with their fellow Germans instead of attacking them. And the reason that the Jews are such a problem, just segueing into that, too, is that, they're not part of the folk and they don't want to join with them and be, because they can't be. They're a foreign element and they don't have the same values and the same desires for the German nation that the Germans do. So.
Right. So would you say that is, you know, one of the main points to recognize when discussing the Jewish problem is that the Jews are a foreign, distinct ethnic group, totally separate and alien and even hostile towards white people?
Yeah, they work to divide and weaken whites. And they're behind all the multicultural racial movements because they think that's better for the Jews. So they come in and they want to do what's good for the Jews, not what's good for the people of the nation. They're trying to get all the rights in, you know, to get full rights.
Right.
In it. And they're not loyal. We know they're not loyal, because they are foreign. You know, they don't have that love of their own people. They don't enjoy that community. They don't, their ancestors don't go way back there. Some of them have been there for a while, it's true, so they think they've become German. But, and some of the Jews in Germany did really love Germany. Some of them did, and some of them still do. But, Hitler wasn't in a hurry to get rid of every last one of them either. You know, he wasn't like, he didn't hate them to that extent. He just wanted to make Germany work better because
right.
they were at that point, they were traitorous, you know, I mean, they were causing real serious difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did Hitler really think about the Jews?
Well, he thought they were a problem. Yeah, you know, he thought
right.
they were a problem, and they, you know, they were all these things I just said, and they would say that Jews wanted to destroy Germany, they wanted to destroy Germans, Hitler thought that Jews were they were just gonna try to move them out of Germany, have them immigrate places, you know, other places. And then when he occupied France and other parts of Europe, then he wanted to get them out of everywhere, all those places too.
Right.
So, it became a big project.
Yeah. And if you read Mein Kampf and read what he has to say about the Jews and how he really started thinking about the Jewish problem when he started noticing that, you know, pretty much every degenerate piece of art or, you know, theater production or literature or whatever,
right,
was promoted by Jews, was done by a Jew. And he started recognizing just how truly foreign they were and how, just subversive they were and destructive. It was really sort of, I mean, he was just being objective about it. And it's so amazing reading the insights that he has to, that he articulates in Mein Kampf, because it's just as true today as it was back then. They're doing the same damn thing they were doing back then.
Well, look at Germany. Weimar Germany became so, oversexed stuff and everything, crime, sex, crime and drugs and so on were rampant in Berlin and other big cities. And, the German people were being corrupted and harmed, and German women were being pulled into pornography and, but I was going to say,
prostitution. Yeah.
They were being robbed blind. They didn't have any money. The Jews didn't have any sympathy for them. The Jews had come in from, Poland, Eastern Europe and Russian places, they had a lot of money. And because Germany was so absolutely broke, so they had a lot of money and they were building up their, you know, buying things and running things and degrading the Germans. They were buying up German farmers' land when they couldn't pay their mortgages or whatever, or their bills, and they were just destroying everything. And Hitler saw all that. They all saw all that. And they wanted to, you know, put a stop to it. That's what his party was all about.
Right. Well, and also another really, powerful argument that he was making, you know, in his critiques of Jews was that, I mean, these people are basically just a race of criminals. And I mean, again, look at how Jews operate in America, just in America today, like in the last 10 years. Wall Street scandal after Wall Street scandal. I mean, every single time it's a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Like all this, they're just like one big crime ring. And I mean, if you look at it from a historical perspective, you can see that this is what they do. This is how they operate. They essentially do operate as a mafia, as a criminal mafia. But I mean, there's so many just examples, like in your face examples in a modern context that demonstrate that everything he had to say about Jews was absolutely correct.
Well, that's right. And you know, people will say, well, all Jews are not criminals, and look at, there's a lot of professional people and this and that and the other thing. Well, that's true, but they don't go after the ones who are criminals, and they also live off in a large way, the people of the nation they're in, and they don't contribute to those people to very much degree. They contribute to keeping things good for the Jews is what they're mostly concerned with. Even if they're not absolute outright criminals, they want to keep situation good for the Jews. So they're always liberal. They're always, wanting to open up the borders and let more people come in.
Right. What's best for the Jews? That's how 99% of these people operate, is that's what drives their life. I mean, that's what they're dedicated to. What is going to advance our group's interests? And it's always, you know, they're always working to harm our interests. And see, this is the thing about all this multiculturalism and all this immigration. I mean, even if you support this nonsense, and a lot of people do, you have to recognize that there is an agenda behind it, and this agenda is not good for us. That's the point that I try to make to people that, like, support this stuff. It's like, you know, look, I understand that there's a lot of good Mexicans, there's a lot of good immigrants or whatever.
Sure.
But it's bigger than that. It's like, look, that's not even the point I'm trying to make here. The point I'm trying to make is that the Jews are openly doing this, openly promoting these policies because it advanced their interests against ours. That's the whole point of this. That's what needs to be understood. It's not like, oh, look, they're brown, we hate them. They're bad people even. It's just, no, look, there's a bigger agenda behind all this, and we have to recognize it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, they use that. I mean, like when Trump first said, the Mexicans are coming across the border. They're not their best people. They're this, that, and the other thing. And then some of them, are probably good people. And then they just jumped on that. Oh, he's calling Mexicans rapists and murderers. He's calling all Mexicans. How can he do that? Well, of course, he wasn't doing that. But the noise that this media and Democrat Party makes against him, is just, or, you know, for things like, saying things like that, is so loud and so everywhere that, I don't even know, but I think it should be ignored. Because I don't, we found that Trump supporters didn't listen to what those people were saying. Back when Hitler had his big following, the people weren't listening to that stuff. They knew better. But we're somehow, that's the whole thing. We're supposed to, they try to get us to believe that what they're saying is what everybody is saying and everybody's listening to it and everybody's thinking it. And it's not really even true. More people have a mind of their own than that. So,
right.
I just don't know how to handle this. You know, we're not big enough. We don't have people working in the field who should be doing this kind of thing. Just a few. And most of the people who support, say, Hitler and who support Trump, are just ordinary working people. Who, you know, are, can vote and go to rallies and stuff, but they're not going to put out information. They're not working for the newspapers or the news organizations. They're not working for the sophisticated magazines or whatever. I don't know. I just think we need, if we could, draw people's attention away from that or just not make so much out of it. We sort of look at how I'm just dominated by media. I'm focused on the media all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think about these things and I'm looking and I've got websites and I've got, stuff to write about and so on, but, it shouldn't be that big of a deal.
Right. So, and this is kind of getting into, the final topic I wanted to address is, and that is, you know, what do we need to do to secure the existence and future of the white race? I mean, it's clear that there, you know, white genocide is a very real phenomenon, is a very real agenda. And I think pretty much the entire paradigm largely rests on the fake, false World War II narrative that we've been given by the Jews. And I mean, there's other aspects to it as well, but I think foundationally, it does center around this false weaponized narrative of World War II. I think you would agree with me. I think the fake Holocaust story is central in all of this. So my question to you is, you know, what steps do we need to take to combat this, to overcome this, and to really, you know, secure our future?
Well, the first thing is I've already said white people have to care about it. I'm serious about that. White people have to care about it. And there's a lot of white people who don't care about it. And, you secure your future by having children of your race, you know, or, you know, I didn't, but, I would sure do it now. I mean, if I later on I realized and I would have, worked harder at it, but it wasn't the easiest thing. It wasn't the most natural thing to happen in my life. So, but anyway, you know, you just, you have to get out of this, individualism and into the collective of the white race because people don't have, families. They don't even want to get married. They don't want to do anything that's going to be inconvenient for them. Or have to stay with somebody they don't want to stay with after a little while or whatever. And, you know, this kind of selfishness, which we are into and which we've been led into, no question about it. We've been led into it, is what's destroying us. You know, and Guillermo Rudolph, one of my last radio programs, I had him on and, he sometimes seems to be too forgiving of the Jews, but he's a true blue German. He really cares about his own national people and his own birth nation and so on. And it's just painful to see how it's being destroyed. And the Germans don't do anything about it. And this is common in Europe. It's now here in the United States. And these people are out reproducing us like gangbusters, and we're letting them and saying, well, I guess that's the way it should be.
Yeah, it's very sad. Very sad to see.
I agree with you. It's the World War II narrative as they push that and made us feel guilty. And we are way too susceptible to guilt and to this idea that we had to be tolerant. You know, nobody else is tolerant, but we white people, this is what we give the world, our tolerance, you know, and we have to be tolerant and let people come in. We can't keep people out of our country. That's evil. And it was pointed back to, Adolf Hitler's Germany and the Holocaust and that he started the war and was a war, you know, did all that stuff. But, now it just lives on its own. I don't think you even have to go back there. It does. I mean, it's used plenty, but it's just the idea that it's wrong. It's wrong.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's very true. And it's just amazing. It's like, you know, white people just cannot snap out of it. You know, collectively anyways. I mean, there's obviously individuals that have, but man, and what's even more amazing is that, at least in my experience, you know, white people are going to be some of your biggest opponents, you know, when you're trying to tell them these things, or at least not even tell them, just talk about it. Like, hey, did you know this? You know, they don't want to hear this.
Who are the biggest people against the Nazis other than Jews? It's all those Europeans. They just jump at it right away. Oh, we hate that Hitler and those Nazis. We don't want any Nazis around here. Everything. And that word is being used more and more in the current Democrat Party, all these, violent protests and so on going on. It's just anti-Nazi. Everybody's a Nazi. You're a Nazi, Nazi, Nazi everywhere. It's pretty incredible.
It's very childish and just stupid. But yeah, I mean, they'll call you a Nazi. They were calling Trump a Nazi. I mean, we talked about this last time.
Yeah. Well, so what do we do? We have to, be a voice of reason and intelligence, but you got to get people to listen to you. And so I find it all very, I'm sorry. I find it hard to find a way. That's why I console myself just saying, oh, you know, I think I'll build up an archive of National Socialist material. We need to have that for the future. We don't want to let this get lost. Working at things like that is something that I can enjoy. I can do, but I'm not reaching people currently. And what I admired so much about Trump, that he did what nobody else has done, is that he got all this huge millions of people's attention.
He's reaching people. Yeah.
I mean, when has somebody who says the thing he says ever gotten that? How did he do it? But he did it.
Well,
so I really have to say, you know, we've got to hold on to what he's done for us. He's done a lot. And try to help him keep it going.
Yeah, and you know, I hear you. I understand your point, and I don't really disagree with you. All I will say though is that in order to really deal with these problems, to deal with all the problems that Trump has articulated and talked about, which is very good, we can't avoid the race issue. We can't avoid the Jewish problem. I mean, and he does. By ignoring these problems, we're never going to solve them. I mean,
he's only working toward a strong America, basically.
Yeah.
What's that going to do for us? A strong America, but he did indicate that he wanted to keep it white, you know, white majority. He did indicate he wanted to bring in people who were contribute more, and that meant, you know, more people from Europe and so on. And he did want to cut back on people coming up from Mexico and Central America and so on and all of that. And
right.
He did the best he could with it, but it's not acceptable.
It's not
to
enough.
Say those things, John.
Yeah.
And if you do say those things, you're relegated to the fringe.
Right. Well, see, and that's why I admire Hitler so much, is because he was just openly saying these things, and like he would not back down. He was not avoiding these issues like our leaders
right.
do, or
and
making excuses for him. Well, yeah, it was, but I mean, I'm sick. I'm
World War II hadn't happened yet.
Right, right. Well, I'm sick of hearing, oh, you know, we could never talk about the Jews because it's so taboo, because of Hitler, because of this bullshit. Stand up there and talk about it. We got to fight back. Look at, I just posted a video by Horst Mahler, for example. I mean, here's a guy. Why can't a political leader get up and say something like he's saying? I mean, why do we always have to say, oh, look, it can't be said. It's too taboo. It's too controversial. Screw that. That's a losing attitude right there. I mean, we have to call the Jews out.
He's saying it, John, on his way back to prison.
Well, right. I mean,
this is why they're not giving me my parole that I should have, why they're sending me back to prison, because I'm saying these things about the Jews.
Right.
But he's, anyway.
But he's saying it anyways, and I mean, that's what it's gonna take sacrifice. It's a fight. We have to fight back.
Yeah, he's saying, but you know, I admire him, and I always like everything he says and writes. I just always respond to it positively, and I like to hear what he says. But he's always been a radical. He kind of goes to the far radical end. I was kind of angry that he got himself into a court case because he had an interview with this Jewish magazine writer. And when the guy came to his place to interview him, Mahler raised his arm up and said Heil Hitler to him. Now, why did he do that? He wanted to do it. But, then the guy got the interview and all that went fine and published it. Then he went and reported him to the authorities. And then he had to go to trial on that and that and a few other things that he had done, I guess they put together. He had 13 years in prison. And for a man his age, that was stupid to do that. I mean, how do you fight? It's very hard to fight. We're here in the United States. We can write these things on our websites. We can talk about this on the podcast and publish it. We're okay. We're U.S. citizens. But they're trying to take that away from us. They're getting closer to it, too, with hate speech. They're using this hate speech idea to get rid of free speech. And they're making progress. Because everybody now believes in hate speech. Oh, yeah, hate speech, that's real. No, it's not. It's not a fake thing to come up with.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where we'd have to start right there, with saving our free speech. We're down to that. Not just saving the white race. We can't talk about, we can still talk about free speech in the Constitution and the First Amendment. That still has a value to the majority of people. So we need to go right there.
Right.
And point out who's trying to get rid of it. And it's clear the Jews want to get rid of our free speech.
You know, I gotta ask you what you make of the whole alt-right phenomenon. Do you see any prospects here? I mean, is the movement going on the right track with this, or what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I don't identify with the term alt-right. And,
for the record, neither do I at all, but I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I'm
really happy calling myself a national socialist, but I realize that that's easy, you know, because there is no national socialist party to, you know, really to anything. It's just to say I believe in it or something, but it doesn't require anything from me. But that's where I'm most comfortable. But I realize that that's also German, and, you know, I've been accused by so many of being too pro-German and not pro-white. And what happened on my travels, you know, and my intellectual development and so on, is that at the White Network, I started questioning whether white nationalism was effective in actually changing anything, but what was country nationalism was better. You know, that you could be a German nationalist, a French nationalist, a British nationalist, or whatever. Then you had something real that you were dealing with. But white nationalism was kind of up in the air, and there was no white country. The United States was the most white country like that, which wasn't a particular, you know, European ethnic group. But now the United States is multicultural, and we're already almost a minority. So our children are. So it's not working. I don't think white nationalism has made much progress or done much. People love it, you know, they like to talk about it, but I don't think it's accomplished much. Sure. There's a lot of good books.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, right now we have hopes, and unfortunately our hopes are looking weaker and weaker, for European nationalist parties. I had high hopes for the AfD in Germany. Now they've stumbled. And, I don't think, Le Pen is going to make it in France, and none of them can make it. But at least they've got something going there, and people are voting for them and so on. But, we've got Trump. So we thought, well, that was great. But now he's stumbling, and, so that's where I stand on that. I'm sorry that it's that way, but that's, you know, I'm trying to be honest about it, saying we should do a little critique here maybe and see what really works. Does it work?
Is what the alt-right doing working, do you think?
No, it's only because of, they might have built up more of a following, but then they hooked up with Trump, and that's what made him put him on the, everybody talking about him. So now, everybody knows what the alt-right is, but it gets bashed and demonized and, lied about. But, I think they're doing some, I'm of mixed mind whether what Aunt Andrea Anglin is doing is good or not. I can see why people think it is, it does seem awfully hateful, you know, and they can just say that. I mean, it's considered a hate site, and it does seem hateful, not lighthearted or fun or anything like that. But it tells the truth, but he wants to shock people, and then all these people that are his main followers, like all that shock stuff, and they repeat that. I don't know if it's doing any good though.
And that's kind of my thing. It's like, I like this side. I think he's doing good work. I think there's a lot of people doing good work, but at the end of the day, it's like, gosh, is this really going to get us anywhere? I don't know. I mean, hopefully it's the start of something bigger. I mean, I like what, you know, Spencer's doing. I hope he does, you know, these college tours where he's going out and talking to everybody. But even him, you know, he wouldn't present this information like I would. That's for damn sure. He wouldn't be talking about the Jews. He's not really talking about revisionism or anything like that. But I mean, I think it's certainly a step in the right direction. I mean, again, I don't think we're going to get anywhere until we're dealing openly with all of these topics. And sadly, they are the most taboo subjects on the face of the earth, you know? So I mean,
That's why they shut them down, because they know that they're the most important topics and that that's the key to things. So that's right. Why they shut it down. And so you can see everything that they shut down is because that's what they don't want anybody to hear.
Yeah, yeah. And even the perspectives that like Richard Spencer would articulate, which are good, and I agree with it, they don't even want that to see the light of day. And I mean, he's not even really saying anything radical at all. I mean, at least, I don't want to.
He can't stand up. It's not allowed for white people to stand up for white interests or for white people. Like Kevin McDonald says so many times, and it's so reasonable. White people have interests. Why can't white people express their interests? It's a simple, that's a very simple, modest request, but that's like, oh no, you can't do that.
Right. Well, and not only the interest, it's even like identifying as white. Like you can't even like positively identify as a white person and care about white interests. I mean, you know,
it's so basic.
It's like the most basic things and it's so obviously wrong. And yet it's just taken as the gospel truth. You know, yes, it is illegitimate. It is wrong. It is bad for white people to do these things.
Deduce from this that the culture that has succeeded is the communist culture, the anti-nationalist, anti-European culture. That's what succeeded, and we have that more and more in this country, in the United States. So, and then these horrible, vicious gangs of protesters. Are evidence of that they're all over the place. I mean, just breaking the law and attacking people. Yeah, I'm glad that Richard Spencer is going to do this tour. I would certainly admire him for that. Give him a lot of, you know, credit and support that. He's one person who's trying to do something, and there's not very many, but he's trying to be serious about it. So I support that.
I do too. I totally support it.
I'm not doing it. I can't do it. So,
yeah.
You know, but I don't know. Yeah, you and I agree on an awful lot of things about history, but I don't know what we could, with other people who feel the same way, what we could do, better. Maybe we should have some meetings and talk about it.
I don't know. Yeah, I know. It's very difficult. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else there is really to do. I mean, we're doing the best we can. That's for sure. I mean,
well, I think you're a brave person, John. I really do, because you came upon this stuff at a young age when your life was opening up to you, and you went with this because you thought it was the truth, and you're sticking with it. And I think that's very brave of you. I can't say that if you're going to be a success, but at least you're doing your best.
Yeah.
And it makes you, and I guess you're a truth lover. And when people are truth lovers, they have to follow the truth as they see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically.
Better than to look up to than Adolf Hitler. So I agree with you. We share that. And I suppose we should work to, you know, I've gotten caught up in a lot of, there's so many side issues and there's so many things that seem important. But, I really am happier when I'm just dealing with Adolf Hitler and all those, National Socialist issues and so on. If I just did that, I would be happy and, feel productive, but I get into all kinds of other things, which I can't do anything about. So, I might as well just, do, well, you know, you do what you can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've definitely done a lot of good work over the years, and I'm looking forward to seeing your collection of National Socialist material up on a beautiful website, which I'm sure you'll develop very soon. No, I think that's good. I think that's a good project for you.
I'm working on all those Hitler Table Talk podcasts.
Okay.
Uh, order to put them on CD so that they, so that people can buy the CDs and have them, you know, on say two or three CDs rather than, have to depend on the internet. You know, I'm starting to worry about the internet. What, excuse me. When I started, I thought, boy, just put all this stuff on the internet. Then it'll be, permanently there, you know. But now I'm not so sure about that. So now I'm realizing things should be put also off the internet and I should publish a lot of stuff, but man, I'm getting kind of old to be doing all this.
Well, do it. I'm sure you could do the CDs for sure. And I know you have a very extensive radio archive. I do too. That's something I should consider doing is at least get them on a CD, downloading them and having them. Just in case anything like that does happen, that would be a travesty to see all that just be erased.
Yeah.
I mean, I have pretty much all of them saved anyways, but. So, well, Carolyn, it is, we're approaching an hour and 45 minutes. I promised I'd try to keep this to an hour and a half at the very most.
Well, it's my fault, John. I start talking more than I think I'm going to. It's my fault, but that's okay. I enjoyed it and I'm glad I had the opportunity to say these particular things.
Yeah, me too. It's nice chatting with you again and, you know, hopefully we can do this again in the future. It's, never a shortage of things to talk about for sure. And as you said, I think we pretty much see eye to eye on this historical stuff and what needs to be done. And there's no doubt we gotta fight back. We gotta just tell the truth about the Jews and about our history. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not hateful. It's just, it is the truth. And by not talking about it, it is just destroying our world. And it's wrong, and we have a righteous cause, and we need to never back down. And I certainly don't plan on doing that, although it may not be the wisest decision I've ever made in my life, but it's what needs to be done.
Well, we live in a degenerate society, too. And so people's values are not very healthy, I would say, in general.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Needless to say, we got a lot of work to do. And going back to that whole thing we talked about, National Socialism, we all have a role to play. So let's try to be as constructive and productive as we're capable of. And you know, that's really what I'm trying to do. And I think that's what you're doing. And you're doing a good job. So we'll have to do this again, Carolyn.
Yeah, one of these days. So take care, John, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks everybody for tuning in. We will talk to everybody real soon.